Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. It is Super Bowl week. We are going to be previewing the games with two podcasts this week here on the Bill Barnwell Show. Later on this week, we are going to get to some of the beat writers, people covering these teams closely throughout the course of the season. Today, we are going to start with X's and O's. And joining us to do that, maybe I would say the person who this show misses the most, the most frequently requested irregular contributor to the Bill Barnwell Show, beloved guest of the show, television personality, former NFL cornerback, Renaissance man himself. It's Mr. Dominique Foxworth. Dominique, how are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Thanks for having me. And the only reason I have not been on more often is because you don't invite me. So you hate me. And I think the listeners should hate you for not inviting me.
Well, I think that's fine. But I don't know if you've noticed, you happen to be on another show that we air quite frequently here on the ESPN Podcast Network, which I don't know if you know is the arch rival of my show.
Oh, got it. So I have to choose. All right. Well, I'll decide at the end of this podcast who I like more and which show I will commit my life to going forward.
Well, I appreciate that. This is a very pressure-packed 20 minutes now, and it's going to be a very pressure-packed 60 minutes for the Patriots and Rams and the Super Bowl. When we're talking to you about what you wrote about for the Undefeated, you tweeted about it as well, which is when we initially started talking about doing the segment. You really looked at Sean McVay's offense and Sean McVay's offense in the context of the bigger picture of sort of recent NFL history, which of course you studied as a player and now studied as someone who's retired from the game. But when you watch Sean McVay's offense, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you in terms of historical comparisons?
Mike Shanahan in the early 2000s. I played in Denver, and I'm not a football historian, so other people might have his offense might remind other people of something else, but I played in Denver, so I saw it up close. And the boots and waggles out of the zone running game, like that is the core to their first and second down offense. And you'll notice that there has not been a game where you haven't seen Jared Goff on kind of a boot or waggle in the first quarter. Like they do, that is their kind of go-to play. It appears that's what their offense is completely built around. And as impressive as some of his plays, some of Sean McVay's play designs are to get people open, those happen maybe like novel, impressive, unique ones happen maybe 10, 11 times a season. But this other stuff is more the backbone of what they want to do.
Right. But it seems so. It seems at odds with what I think our perception is of Shanahan now, right? Where like when he left Washington, when Mike Shanahan left Washington, it was kind of like, oh, this guy's antiquated. He couldn't get Robert Griffin to work. The scheme didn't make sense. It was, you know, outdated. And even with Gary Kubiak, who won a Super Bowl, of course, with the Broncos, when he was leaving in Houston, his final couple of years in Houston, it was, oh, this scheme is so old, so antiquated. Everyone's seen it. Everyone knows how to stop it. So what's the difference here? Why is Sean McVay a genius when Shanahan or Kubiak might be seen as someone who's outdated and antiquated?
Yeah, I think Sean McVay is his best feature is not all this, as far as being a coach, is not him and his play design necessarily, as much as it's his ability to communicate. And from what I've read and the people that I've talked to around that organization, he's very collaborative with the players. So I think that he's found a way to teach it. I don't know, I would never say that the Shanahan, Kubiak, or now kind of McVay style of zone running with the waggle and boots off of it is antiquated, because the dilemmas are still there. So the kind of the core number one dilemma is like the backside defensive end. When you zone away, the backside defensive end is the guy who's supposed to be there for the quarterback if he boots out. But if the defensive end is waiting for that quarterback boot, then it leaves a huge gap on the backside for the cutback. So anytime you can put a dilemma, there is no solution for the dilemma, because once you solve that dilemma, it opens up more. So anybody who said that is, I don't know, I think they're foolish and they don't know anything about football.
Oh, that's a real shame, because I'm sure someone's going to find some article I wrote in like 2009 when I was a little bit more aggressive, a little bit less naive. It's like, Gary Kubiak's got to go. What a dum-dum. And unfortunately, now I'm going to know that's how
I feel. No, I mean, that's why I went with the hottest of takes, so that I could ensure that people could find all this. And so, I mean, there are I think we oversimplify in general as football fans and just people. We try to oversimplify everything. So it's like, if they aren't scoring or if they aren't winning, maybe it has to be one thing that the coach stinks or the quarterback stinks. But you know how complex this game is and how many different factors go into how play would result and then how the result of a game. And so I think that it's possible that people could fail running that system, but it doesn't mean that the system is broken necessarily.
So I'm going to get to the Super Bowl context for this in a second, but just in terms of what you said, it makes total sense to me, and I agree with you 100%. And when you hear people talk about McVay so frequently, it's not about the scheme. It's not about, you know, his play calling. That's not necessarily the genius. It's more just, you know, he's smart because he gets everything to look similar. He adds flourishes to things that might have been something you saw previously, and the culture there was so strong. And yet we see teams around the league who are going out and hiring someone like Cliff Kingsbury, for example, in Arizona, who, again, it's too early to say. We don't know how he's going to do, but the reason he's getting hired is because, you know, realistically, he is someone who is an offensive mind, who has had some success scheming stuff up for guys like Patrick Mahomes in college with Zach Taylor, who's going to take over in Cincinnati, someone who did not have a reputation as a, you know, someone who was going to be a head coach for a while, and someone who, of course, is adjacent to Sean McVay now in Los Angeles as, I believe, the quarterback's coach there. I mean, you know, do you think teams are seeing the wrong thing? And if so, why do you think they're getting blinded by scheme when it's about the other stuff?
Yeah, I think they are seeing the wrong thing. And I think, to be honest, they don't know what the characteristics are to be a successful head coach. And I think, to be fair, there are a lot of different ways to be a head coach and be good at this. So I think they are just hoping and guessing and hoping that they can catch lightning in a bottle and looking for something that resembles Sean McVay at this point. Or, I mean, that's why you get all these people in the Belichick tree get jobs, because they're like, oh, well, maybe he'll be like Belichick. I think that's what we're doing. And there is no combine where you can test someone's emotional IQ, which I think is probably the most important characteristic to be a successful head coach. Like, there is no 40-yard dash for that. There is no training for that. Frankly, I think you and I have talked about this before. The head coaching job is not really coaching necessarily. Like, you do some coaching, but it's a lot more managing, delegating, being a public face. Like, these are things that no coach has really been prepared for. And at least through their previous experience, like, none of that stuff is what you do as a defensive coordinator or an offensive coordinator. The one thing that I would argue, maybe being a special teams coach, there is some, you have to have some social or emotional IQ in order to communicate on special teams, because you're making a lot of people do jobs that they don't want to do. So getting them focused on doing those jobs and doing them well, like, I think that requires more than this kind of traditional, stereotypical, iron-fisted head coach model that people seem to think works.
You're talking to a sports writer about social IQ. That is your first mistake, Mr. Foxford. Incredibly
you're no regular sports writer. I think you understand what I'm talking about. You love this self-deprecating stuff, but I know better.
No, 100%. And obviously that stuff is impossible to gauge. But, I mean, I don't know. I think we don't have any good evidence that teams really know what they're doing in the broader context of hiring coaches. And I don't know if that's going to change. I have no reason to think that's going to change. But it certainly is really fascinating when you think about these billion-dollar organizations, multi-billion-dollar organizations, making hiring decisions based on you know, being relatively adjacent to someone like Bill Belichick or Sean McVay. All right, we'll be back here with Dominique Foxworth talking more about the Super Bowl in a second, but first, want to talk about our pals at SeatGeek. And of course, I bring up SeatGeek all the time on this show. I use them every single time I need to buy tickets to an event, whether I'm going, for example, to Vegas this week. I'm going to go to Vegas after the Super Bowl. Going to go check out another night's game. Went the first time. It was great. Guess where I bought tickets to go back a second time? That is with our pals at SeatGeek, because I know I don't have to go to 18 different ticket sites around the web to look for tickets, because SeatGeek is going to do that for me and for you too. Not just for me. It's not just my privilege as a podcast host, but they're going to look for them as well. They're going to rate all those things they find, so you're going to know you're getting a good deal. And then you're going to get a chance to purchase tickets that are fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence. Don't have to worry about fake tickets here on SeatGeek. So again, sports, comedy, concerts, theater, Anything you need to buy tickets to get in the door, you can do that on SeatGeek. I do it on my phone. I do it on my computer. No matter how you want to do it, I just recommend going to SeatGeek first, checking out those ticket prices. You're going to get a good deal. And even better, if you want to get an even better deal, download the SeatGeek app and enter in promo code Barnwell today. You'll get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, promo code Barnwell, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase today. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. In terms of this game, in terms of how Bill Belichick is going to deal with Sean McVay's offense, the thing that really, you know, fascinates me is that over the past couple weeks, and really sort of since that Week 15 game against the Eagles where they lost, the Rams have changed things up. They haven't gone with 11 personnel quite as frequently. They were at something like 98.5% through the first 15 weeks of the year. And then J.J. Anderson comes in, Todd Gurley's hurt. They run more 12 personnel than 11 personnel against the Cardinals in a game where they are blowing them out, winning for most of the game, granted. But even last week against the Saints, they go down 14-0, or go down 6-0, excuse me. I think 13-0 at some point. They're struggling on offense. They go back to 12 personnel. They start mixing things up. They don't rely on Reynolds to be on the field as much. They bring on Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee and use more two tight end sets. Against the Cowboys, Ted Wynn pointed this out on my podcast a couple weeks ago. They're a team that almost never runs out of the shotgun, almost always passing out of the shotgun. First quarter of that game, the first play of the second quarter, they hand the ball off in the shotgun twice and get the Cowboys, you know, totally throw the Cowboys off for 2 11-yard gains with Anderson on the running game. So if you're McVay and if you're Belichick, how do you think that sort of manifests itself out in terms of Sunday? Do you think if you're McVay, you go back to what your core strengths are and sort of dare Belichick to stop them? Or do you try and throw him off and try and throw him things he's not expecting, even if it doesn't play to your team's strengths, which is going to be, like you said, the outside zone and play action off the outside zone?
Yeah, so I think that they will it's not going to be a surprise to McVay that Shanahan is going to try to take away the things that he does well. So I'm sure they will have a alternative to their favorite things. But you have to at least try the stuff that you do. And I think the interesting thing is how we've always, all year, we focus a lot on 11 personnel because they do it so much. But the fact that they switched to 12, it hasn't changed the type of plays that they're running. They're running the same exact plays. They're just doing it with different people. And that's more about getting the defense that you want out on the field rather than the nickel. Maybe they had a matchup where they saw matchups that they liked there. And I think that you have to go against your tendencies. One thing that I've always noticed about the Patriots is they will change things in the second half or in the fourth quarter. They'll bring out a defensive, I'm speaking defensively now, they'll bring out a defensive play on a key third down that they haven't run all game. And I think that's impressive. Even if they've played well, I think we saw it in the Chiefs game. They played very well in the first half defensively against the Chiefs. And then in the second half, all of a sudden, Gilmore is on Kelsey. And they just change things up to there's a benefit to keeping the opponent on their toes. And if I were Sean McVay, I would do the same thing, whereas there are particular plays that I know are going to work, and I need to have those plays. And you don't want to try to teach your team an entire new scheme, but you need to have variations off of the scheme. And I think that's something that both Belichick and McVay have done well in their careers, is they make things, they make tweaks to their plays that are simple for their players to execute, but it complicates the rules. So I think back for McVay, an example, that deep touchdown they had to Cooper Kupp in the Minnesota game was just a slight tweak. Instead of running a shallow cross on a tight split, he ran a couple steps shallow and then took it downfield. That was an entire headache for a man coverage that you kind of tend to pass off those shallow routes. But for Cooper Kupp, it was a slight change in his route. It was no change for offensive line, really no change for Jared Goff. And it was a simple play that was super complicated for the Vikings to work out. So being able to find ways to complicate things for the defense while keeping it simple for your offense, or vice versa, is, I think, when you talk about what being a good coach is, that, to me, is being a good coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, you think about that play. It's something the Vikings were passing off. I think Anthony Barr was the guy in coverage eventually when Kupp turned upfield for a big play, and you get a linebacker matched up against your speediest, you know, probably your speediest, actually Brandon Cook is their speediest wide receiver, but their second speediest, I would say, wide receiver. It's definitely a mismatch for the Rams in that spot. When you talk about Belichick taking away what you do best, my inclination, I could be wrong, I would imagine he wants to take away you know, their ability to run outside zone really well and then sort of force the game to be back in Jared Goff's hands. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would certainly agree that you would want to take away their running attack and take away that outside zone. The interesting thing that I haven't quite figured out yet about the Rams is how they're able to get Todd Gurley in such favorable situations, or even C.J. Anderson. I think they are the best team. I looked at Todd Gurley's next-gen stats, and he actually has more blockers on average than blockers in the box.
You took my stat. Yeah, that's going in the preview, man. Infuriating.
To be fair, I shot this stat out around week 7, I think. I can look it up when I first wrote about Todd Gurley and how he should be really grateful for Sean McVay, and I rechecked it this week. He's the only back that has a significant amount of carries that, and I assume it has to be checks. Like, they have to be two plays, and you kill one when someone's in the box. Like, that's the only way you can figure that out. And I think having their tight formations, I think, influences that also, because you probably end up counting those tight receivers and slots as blockers in the box, and the defensive backs rarely enter the box in that way. So it's an awesome advantage that they have, and I assume that Bill Belichick is going to try to find a way to show them an 8-man box, show them a 7-man box that is actually an 8-man box where the safety comes in and joins late.
See? This is all going in the written preview I am doing for ESPN this week. When we release this podcast, it'll be going up the next day. Oh, this is infuriating.
I'm sorry.
Bring a brilliant mind on the show, and this is what happens. Steals my stuff out before I can even put it out there. I literally have Microsoft Word open right now. It's the next thing I'm getting to after I finish this podcast.
I'm going to find the article where I wrote about it in the single-digit weeks of this season so I can send it to you so you can know that I'm not a thief. I didn't break into your house. Even though we both live in D.C. now, I didn't break into your house and read it off your computer.
I would never. The thief is the wrong word. Just the genius of Dominique Spotsworth led him to the same idea. And it's really fascinating because the Patriots, of course, under Belichick, and I think he actually did this with Nick Saban, you know, sort of has built a defense where, you know, designed in some ways to attack the spread. Not that the Rams were running a spread, but attack the spread by having extra guys in the box and having, you know, defenders in the box who can – you know, who can help support in the case of the run, but then also, you know, be quickly launched back into pass coverage if it ends up being a pass play. And I think that's going to be, you know, one of the spots that ends up really determining this game. It's not just, you know, can they stop Todd Gurley point in point? Todd Gurley may have a great game. I don't know. It's hard to say, but it's more just can Belichick show Goff numbers in the box and fool him to checking into a pass play when he wants Goff to pass and vice versa. I think that's going to be, you know, something that's not going to show up on your first watch of the game or my first watch of the game, but it's going to be really fascinating to look back at this in the All-22 and see if Belichick was able to manipulate Goff and McVay from the sidelines into making the wrong decision.
Yeah, that's why you beat me to that point, because this whole time you're talking about Goff, I'm thinking he has to fool McVay also. As we all know, McVay is very active in Goff's ear up until the 15-second clock, and that was the two other things that I don't know if they were in your guide, or but they should be in your guide, that I wrote about today about the Rams offense, is that they use tight formations more than anyone else. I think 60% of the time their formation is less than 20 yards wide, which the second team, highest team, is 37%. And I think that those tight formations matter because it helps them with having guys in the box. It also helps with that boot stuff because they send the slot receiver down to crack and do kind of a down block on the defensive end to help Goff get the corner. And sometimes that slot receiver gets lost in coverage when he's doing that, and that opens up big plays. Another thing that they do really often is snap the ball with in under 5 seconds. And I think they did that 120 times this year, where they rush to the line of scrimmage, they start, the ref sets the ball and starts the play clock, and they snap the ball in under 5 seconds. They did it 121 times. I think the next highest team was under 40 times. And I think the reason why they do that is because it forces the defense. Once you do it enough times, the defense knows that you're willing to do that. So they cannot disguise. And I think that is all connected to the benefit that, Jared Goff gets from having McVay in his ear. So, if you, as a defense, know that they are not afraid to snap it quickly, you can't really disguise. You need to go and be in the right formation. And then McVay and Goff have plenty of time until the 15-second clock to talk about what they're going to do. So it'll be interesting that if the Pats decide to do something to mess with that, where they'll have, they could potentially have two plays called. And when the clock hits a certain point, they can switch to the other play, because I do think that they are aware that McVay is in his ear, and they're aware that McVay is not going to get messed up. If he knows the defense that you're in, he's going to put that offense in the right play. So why not switch your defense?
How much of this game, strangely enough, is going to revolve around communication as opposed to execution?
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, football is a lot about communication, which we saw the Rams struggle with some of that, with the noise in down in New Orleans. They seem to have difficulty with that, but the Super Bowl obviously is not, there's going to be no issue with the sound, because there's not enough of a fan contingent of either side. It's mostly rich people and not really fans necessarily at the game. So it'll be nice and quiet, like a tennis match. But I do think that the communication matters, because that's something for a defense you're less used to doing. Like audibles on offense, everyone's there waiting for them, the quarterback to snap the ball, and everyone's listening. And offense is very comfortable and experienced with changing plays. But I've been on teams where we've tried to implement some sort of audible system when we're playing a quarterback who – so, for instance, if we were in I was in Baltimore, where we have cover four called, and we see that the quarterback recognizes it and checks into a running play. We've been in situations where we had Ray or Ed be able to check us into an eight-man box. And that's tough, because sometimes it requires movement of the D-line and requires understanding the secondary. And defensive coordinators are reluctant to do something like that, because if you really mess it up, it's a touchdown. Whereas a quarterback on offense, if you blow an audible, well, you're going to get like a 3-4 yard loss or something. It's different than giving up a touchdown. So it's really hard. And we talk very little about defensive communication, but I think it's important. And another drawback of defense communication is our communications aren't that sophisticated on defense, because you don't do it that often. So often the quarterback, if you start yelling Ringo or Lucky, they know that means that the blitz is coming from the right or the left. And you start holding up the number of fingers for the coverage that you're going to be in, then the offense recognizes that. So I do think defensive communication specifically is something that's not worked on enough and not talked about enough. And it is a kind of a next level of football for defenses as they change all the rules to make it harder and harder for defenders. That I think that's something that should be considered and used more often.
Talking about the emotional combine, defensive communication, this is a really holistic, I feel like, football conversation, as opposed to like 90% of the stuff's just going to be, Rams are just going to blow them off the line of scrimmage. They want it more. They're tougher, more physical. I appreciate that we're having a different kind of conversation here. Last question for you before we get to, obviously, the bigger picture prediction or whatever. In terms of the Patriots' coverage of the Rams in this game, obviously the Patriots are a team that it seems like, and I could be wrong, maybe I'm mistaken here, but they're more of a man coverage team than I think most other teams in the NFL are when they're sort of getting to do what they want to do. And how difficult is it, if you're a man coverage team typically, to deal with the Rams, given how much they stack receivers, given how much they have those condensed splits? How do you think the Patriots account for that when it comes to their coverages on Sunday?
Yeah, I do think the purpose of those condensed splits is partially to confuse man coverage and also force teams to check into zone, because that's something that you do a lot when they're in there like that. It's like, all right, well, they're going to use picks and crossing routes, so we'll just check the zone. But the problem with that, and I think it was a deep pass to Reynolds in the game, the championship game last week, where it seemed like the Saints checked into a cover three, and then McVay had a nice little route that was kind of a trips into the boundary. The number two receiver ran an out and up, and the number one receiver kind of ran a deep post and took the cover three corner with him, and Reynolds was wide open down the sideline. So I think they have beaters for zone in man. I think you're probably better off playing man against them, because you won't cut anybody completely loose, and you'll force Goff to actually complete the pass. But I do think that there are coverages where you have a hole player or a rat player where you put him down there and he can catch the crossers and someone is out there to clean up. Or you can do kind of two man where if you cut someone loose, there's a safety there to pick it up. So I think that man coverages with a safety in a advantageous position, not just like, all right, deep middle safety, but you put the safety somewhere where he can help out, I think you're better off doing that than zone, because those stack routes are, you're easy to flood a particular zone when you're, when all your receivers are close. And that's what the Rams end up doing quite a bit on their play action boots, is they always run kind of levels route, which you can't really stop against zone because you don't have enough players. So you, they end up with Goff on the edge with the ball. There's a guy in the flat. There's a guy intermediate out area, and then there's a guy in a, on a deep corner. And you normally only have two defenders over there, so someone's going to be open, which is why you want to be in man in those situations.
Yeah, you can high-low your zone defenders. It's classic Peyton Manning stuff. And Bill Belichick, of course, has a lot of experience against all this with Peyton Manning, with Mike Shanahan. It's going to be a really fascinating game. Now, of course, Dominic, you have approximately 177 more media appearances between now and Sunday. I just want to give you this chance. You know the listenership of this show is a big fan of yours. We're not looking for, you know, we're not looking for a hot take. We're not looking for a simple explanation of whether the one team's going to win. I'm asking you, is there anything about this game that you think is so likely to happen on Sunday that you would feel confident enough to put it on the record right now? Whether it's predicting that someone's going to have a big game, someone's not going to have a big game, some offensive concept's going to work, not going to work, anything you feel that strongly about?
James White, I think, will play well. I think he's going to be good in this game. That is not, I mean, I don't know who's going to win, and nobody really does. And these are really good NFL teams. Like, I felt strongly last year that I thought the Eagles were going to win, and I happened to be right. I don't feel that strongly this year about either team. So I don't feel I'm going to give a prediction on all these other shows because that's what you do. But I'm going to give you the honest prediction, is that I don't really know who's going to win. I know someone's going to kick a ball at some point. I can give you that prediction. That's going to happen.
Somebody's going to kick a ball. Oh, that's all you got. Dominic Foxworth, welcome to Sixth Take here on the Bill Barnwell Show, where after you give those important takes to everyone else, we get the real deal from my good pal, Mr. Foxworth. Well, is there anything you can plug? Do you know anything you're going to be on during the week that you want to want people to check out?
I'll be on the Bill Barnwell podcast. It's the only thing that matters to me right now.
All right.
Mr. Make sure you guys listen to that. Subscribe. Leave reviews.
You do a better job of hyping my own podcast than I do, sadly. Do all that, and then come back after the break. We're going to talk to Doug Farrar, talk about the other side of this matchup here on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, you had Dominic Foxworth talking about the Rams offense in the first half of the show. We're going to talk about the Patriots and focus on things from their side of the field today. In the second half of the show, I have moved to a different hotel, and joining me from the Media Center in Atlanta, Georgia, that's a frequent contributor to the show this year, my old pal of Football Outsiders, Mr. Doug Farrar. Doug, how are you?
Good. It's always nice to have the 2006 FO draft class back together again.
That makes me feel very old, Doug.
I know, right? I'm older than you are, so there.
It's very scary. But yeah, no, it is really cool. I mean, obviously, you know, it has been a while. We've certainly discussed a couple things that are interesting this year. You wrote a great book about the NFL earlier this year as well, which we'll get to again in the plugs. But I'm really fascinated by the matchup we have from the Patriots side of the ball. Let's start with the Patriots on defense in terms of how they're going to cover the Rams. Because you think about, of course, the famous game plan going back to 2001, even before we were at Outsiders, the 2002, I guess, technically, but the 2001 season Super Bowl game plan against the Rams, which, you know, has been feted historically as, let's say, Marshall Faulk over and over and over again, and that will disrupt the Rams offense. I'm going to ask you two questions. I would say, number one, do you think that is a fair representation of the Patriots game plan in that game in 2001? And number two, do you think the Patriots are inclined to follow that game plan against the Rams again here 18 years later, given that you'd figure they're going to have Todd Gurley or perhaps C.J. Anderson as the focal point of that offense?
Well, and of course, as far back as Belichick goes, there are so many different game plans and so many different adjustments because, of course, he doesn't do the same thing week after week. He And it's, you know, it's amazing in the NFL that he's lionized as the guy who, oh my God, he actually game plans for every opponent, which kind of says more about the other guys than it does about him.
Right.
To a very large degree. There are a few things I think to watch for. I talked to Kurt Warner and Willie McGinnis earlier this morning. Warner brought up the point that in week 10, the Rams and Patriots played in the 2001 season, close loss for the Patriots. Warner got picked off twice, but the Rams won it. And Warner brought up the point, and I've, you know, watched the game, and it does come up. And then in that first game, the Patriots tried to run track with the Greatest Show on Turf, bunch of 70 B looks. And when I was talking to McGinnis, he said, we knew at that point we could not run with the Rams. So the idea was then to knock them off at the line of scrimmage, you know, in the famous bullseye game plan. And at this point, that storyline goes without saying. Well, if you were to take the all 22 of that Super Bowl and the all 22 of the Patriots Chiefs AFC championship game, I think you'd see a lot of very similar concepts. Against the Chiefs,
really?
The Patriots were maniacal about really, really tight, not just press and not just man, but hyper-aggressive press man. There was Stephon Gilmore was beating Sammy Watkins up over and over and over and over. There was early in the game, there was a Mahomes incompletion to Watkins where Gilmore knocked him so far off his route at the line of scrimmage that when Mahomes threw that the post downfield, Watkins was 5 yards behind the throw because it's an anticipation throw. You saw this over and over, and that's exactly what the Patriots did to the Rams. Obviously, different personnel on both sides. Belichick, you know, and his staff, Flores and all those guys, I think they dusted off the bullseye game plan for the Chiefs. And the Rams were in a different sort of offense, but I think you could see a lot of very similar concepts. And, of course, Sean McVay will be, you know, he'll be well-versed on that. He will have watched that game a lot, and he'll have his own concepts. But I think you could see that. The other thing that comes up, and I wrote about this week, is Belichick's game plan against the Bills as the Giants' defensive coordinator in Super Bowl 25. And I think this could be incredibly relevant because the Bills had the K-gun, no huddle, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, James Lofton, four Hall of Famers on one offense, which is pretty good. And Belichick said, we're going to let Thurman Thomas run, and we're not going to make him the focal point. And everyone from Carl Banks on was like, have you lost your mind? It doesn't make any sense. And then he explained it to them. What we're going to do is let Thurman Thomas run, and that's going to chew clock, and that plays right into our hands. So Thomas ran for 130-something yards, had a touchdown, but it wasn't enough. And what they did then was to, you know, they had two down linemen on a lot of the plays defensively, a lot of 6 and 7 DB looks, which in the early 90s was not exactly usual. And they just, they stopped the, because the Bills offense at that time, it wasn't a lot of deep throwing. It was, you know, quick no huddle, short to intermediate passes, get yards after the catch, and you're just exhausting the defense. And Belichick knew that he could not have his defense exhausted. So I think between Gurley, whatever his health status is, and C.J. Anderson, you may see elements of that as well. So you could see a combination of bullseye and what he did as the Giants defensive coordinator in Super Bowl 25, which a game plan that's now in the Hall of Fame. So you could see a combination of Belichick's two most famous defensive game plans in Super Bowl 53.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, 40 minutes of possession for the Giants in that game to 19-27 for the Bills. So, I mean, obviously Jim Kelly, you know, who great quarterback at that time, one of the best quarterbacks in football, 18 of 30 for 212, no touchdowns, no interceptions, but sacked once and, you know, really constrained by that game plan. And I think you think about the Rams offense, and you think about what they do. We talked about this a little bit with Dominique in the first half of the show. I mean, what they want to do is they want to run outside zone, and they want to go with play action off outside zone. That's something that Belichick is familiar with. We've seen it with a bunch of different offenses. Like Shanahan came to mind. We talked about it again in the first half, and Peyton Manning, of course, in Indy. So he's seen this a million times before. Do you think in the same situation, he wants to sit there and say, okay, does he want to invite CJ Anderson onto the field and say, okay, you want to run for 4 yards of carry with CJ Anderson? That makes sense to us. Like, would he rather have Anderson on the field, do you think, than Gurley, just because it limits sort of, you know, how explosive they can be with their running back in the passing game?
Well, Anderson's an interesting cat because, of course, they signed him in mid-December.
Right.
There's 4 games of tape. He's a better inside runner than Gurley. I think his skill set is more limited, but he does that well. And on obvious passing downs, which in the NFL today translates into pretty much every down, they'll put Adam Butler, who is a really kind of underrated potential factor in this game, mm-hmm. in as a nose tackle. He had about 500 snaps this year and last year. He weighs about 290. So if you have a 290-pound nose, either one tech or head up, shade over the center, you know, and you're running a 240-pound CJ Anderson against that, you may have the advantage. Mm-hmm. The thing about play action, though, if when you look at Goff's season this year, I think he's, and I'm not saying anything about him as a quarterback. I'm saying that in his, you know, his third year, essentially his second year in a functional offense under McVay, mm-hmm. he's still a guy who needs first, second read open. He needs to see a clear picture or things get kind of weird for him. And the thing about play action is that you're turning your back to the defense. So if you're turning your back to the defense, then you have to flip around after that fake mm-hmm. and see what you've got. And then you've got Belichick's defensive backs and linebackers with their physical nature affecting the timing and the geometry of the routes. Mm-hmm. And then you factor in the fact that in the last 4 games with their rushing attack, New England has severely limited opponent time of possession. Mm-hmm. You could start to get into a point where Jared Goff runs out of oxygen. Mm-hmm. And he starts to think, I have to make big plays here. And if he starts playing outside of structure, historically, that's not been a good thing for him. So I think overall the Patriots game plan will be limit the time of possession, allow the things that will not hurt us, and force Goff to win the game with too many big plays. Because the Patriots, not only have they controlled the clock in the playoffs, I mean, they had over 43 minutes of possession in the championship game. And obviously the Chiefs never saw the ball in overtime, which is a separate issue.
Right.
But, you know, it could force Goff to do things that are beyond his capabilities. And especially, again, with play action, you're not seeing the route concepts all the way through as you would if you're just straight dropping back or booting or whatever. So play action could actually be a negative thing for Goff, especially, as I said, if the Patriots defensive backs, and Gilmore is a huge thing in that regard, whether they double Cooks or Woods or whoever. It's not so much who they double, it's how they knock those guys off their routes. Mm-hmm. And if Jared Goff sees the field for 1.25 seconds instead of 2.5 seconds on that drop back, that could be a real problem.
Absolutely, Doug. I mean, you think about the play action game for the Rams, and the Patriots have struggled against the play action here in the postseason. I think they have the worst passer rating, but it obviously has not hit them frequently enough that it's been a major problem for the Rams here, or for the Patriots here, I should say. Excuse me. So, you mentioned the Patriots running game, and certainly it has been a core component of what they did against the Chargers, and then against the Chiefs, who have the worst run defense DVOA in the league. The Rams are not much better, but they have shut down the Cowboys and the Saints. They have not run the ball effectively, against the Rams in the postseason. So from your perspective, it sounds like you think the Patriots are going to stick with their running game. How do you think they're going to have to shape that offense and shape that running game to attack the weaknesses with the Rams?
I think they're going to lead with the run game because the Rams, in their standard light packages, standard nickel four-man front or three-man front, if you know, that they've got different Leos and Barron or Littleton rushing off the edge or whatever.
Right.
I think at that point, you know, if the Rams, because the Rams had, next-gen stats per them, against the Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott faced 8 or more in the box on 40% of his runs.
Wow.
Kamara and Ingram, I think, had, 19 or 20 combined runs. I mean, the Saints really threw the ball a lot more. So that was a different thing. I mean, they've limited two run offenses, but not at this level. Because this Patriots, I mean, you can look at the Eagles' multiple run game from last year. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen a run game this multiple and this effective since the Harbaugh and Greg Roman 49ers mm-hmm. of the Colin Kaepernick era. And obviously right. Brady isn't going to run around like Kaepernick, but you will run, you know, you'll see power counter trap. You'll see wham. Certainly when I was talking to Ivan Fears, their running backs coach on Monday, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how James Devlin, who has seen the field for over 400 snaps this year, certainly unusual for a fullback. Devlin's mm-hmm. a major part of what they do, especially in the trap wham game.
Yep.
And then you've got inside outside zone. I mean, this is really when Dante Scarnecchia came back a few years ago, this is the offensive line I believe he envisioned.
Yep.
And that's where that went on the field for the whole season. But I mean, and then you look at the Donald Sue interior pressure and the correct narrative that Brady struggles against interior pressure. Well, their two starting guards, Dooney and Mason, have had over 2,400 snaps this year.
Yeah.
One sack, 11 quarterback hits, 31 quarterback hurries in over 2,400 mm-hmm. snaps. They know how to stop this. They know how to deal with it. And the thing about the Rams is, even if they're in their base one gap 5-2, which Wade has been running since the beginning of time, it's one gap attack. And you will often see, whether it's Sue or Donald or Brockers, you'll often see them shoot through the pocket, and you could see them shoot through the pocket against the Patriots, only to watch Sony Michelle walk right by them.
Mm-hmm.
You could see that a lot. So the 7 to 8 man fronts with the Rams, they've been working with more gap discipline. It's not really a mush rush, but it's a more measured approach. Now, you can do that against the Patriots. The problem there is you're running cover one or cover three or quarters or whatever, which are Wade's three favorite coverages.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Brady with play action, and that's right. a real problem. And they've been playing more zone since Tlaib came back, but I'm not sure how you cover that with regularity. So, and yes, Brady's been playing a short passing game, but when he does throw deep, he's got 10 touchdowns and 2 interceptions this year.
Mm-hmm.
So because their run game is so multiple and has been so effective, 8 rushing touchdowns in 2 playoff games, this becomes kind of a pick-your-poison thing. And as great as the Rams personnel has been, they have not always played with ideal discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not an offense you can do that against and expect to win.
Yeah. Yeah, you brought up a couple of things I wanted to get to. Number one, you mentioned the Rams, Patriots throwing deep. The Rams, the worst, I believe the worst QBR, maybe the second worst passer rating, one or the other, but certainly bad in both when it comes to deep throws. And the Saints had opportunities to
Although
make plays
you,
deep.
Just to interrupt, you want those splits with and without Tlaib, because when he's in there, his recognition changes the entire. Outside of Donald, I think he's their most important defensive player.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. But what I would say is this, and I'm going to get to the bigger point about the running game, which I thought you brought up. I think James Devlin is a really fascinating player in the context of this game, not for what he does after the ball is snapped. I think when you bring Devlin on the field, the Patriots run 21 personnel more than anybody besides the Niners, who have Kyle Juszczyk making $1 billion. I'm intrigued to see how the Rams match up against James Devlin, because if they stay in base and they're not going to move their cornerbacks around, and they typically don't, well, now you have Julian Edelman probably in the slot against either LaMarcus Joyner, which we saw Amari Cooper exploit for a touchdown, or we have Marcus Peters in the slot, which is not his strong suit. You have a very interesting opportunity with Edelman in the slot. And then if you switch and end up going with your nickel, well, now you have Devlin matched up against, nickel Roby Coleman or someone in the run game, where you have a huge opportunity to take advantage of of the nickel. So I think even though it's not going to be about him making a big play as a runner or a receiver or even maybe as a blocker, just I think once you bring Devlin into the lineup and you have 21 personnel, I'm very intrigued to see how the Rams match up against that and if they can hold up against the opportunities that affords the Patriots.
Well, especially, and to bring up the Shanahan parallel again with the Falcons in their Super Bowl year, when they would have their fullback go out wide. Devlin's had 33 snaps out wide this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And obviously what that does is it creates linebacker mismatches. Corey Littleton is kind of their main guy. I mean, we call Barron a linebacker, but he's really a big safety.
Right.
Littleton is their primary linebacker in any sub-package stuff. You know, decent cover guy, okay with run fits, but not what I would call necessarily exceptional. And, of course, the argument is with that front, you don't have to be. But this Patriots, especially the run game, is designed to go past the front. And to me, it's Patriots offensive line versus Rams defensive line is, I think, exactly where this game would be decided. When you talk about Roby Coleman, and it'll be fascinating to see, does Wade believe, okay, I've got the front four, so we're going to go more, you know, if we're having one linebacker on the field, you know, what mm-hmm. we do with Barron, how we distribute things. But if Roby Coleman is a primary slot defender, they can put Devlin in the slot. They can put Edelman in the slot. They can put Gronk in the slot. And by the way, mm-hmm. Gronk, for all his injuries this year, he caught 7 passes last week.
Right.
It would not be unlike the Patriots at all to be unleashing this. And right. then you wonder, do you put Talib, you know, if Gronkowski starts to be a big factor, do you put Talib on him? Do you start to mm-hmm. move more than they have? And it, you know, how much can the Patriots' distribution of personnel unravel what Wade wants to do?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to make some kind of change. Because if you put Littleton out, you know, in man on Devlin, that's fine, but then you're going to have a, you know, they can motion back in and have a box that plays to their strength. You'll have Edelman in the slot against Talib or Peters. Or if you're playing zone and you have Talib out there against Devlin split out wide, and I heard about this in my preview that's going up tonight, same thing. Then you have suddenly Edelman in the slot with an opportunity to make a play. So it's really fascinating to see what sort of changes Wade Phillips is going to make. And if it matters, I mean, the reality is Aaron Donald could dominate this game, or Dominican Sue could dominate off the edge against Marcus Cannon. This could be a totally different situation for the Patriots. It's hardly out of the question, even though, like you said, the Patriots guards have played very well over the course of this season. So I think a really fascinating, you know, sort of back and forth we're going to see, especially early on in that game, and then seeing how the adjustments play out, you know, from the Rams, from the Patriots with their personnel usage. Is there any one, you know, there's no sleepers in the Super Bowl. Everyone's analyzing everything, but is there, you know, if we're sitting here Monday morning, is there a concept or something you think we're not talking about enough right now that you think would you wouldn't be surprised if it played a bigger role in the Super Bowl than people are expecting?
I think it'll be the Patriots' ability to force the Rams' defensive linemen to be aggressive and out of position. Mm-hmm. I think the trap game will be big. I think they'll pull their guards. They'll run outside zone. They will allow, because they know they can't stop Donald and Sue and Brockers and Fowler. Right. And, you know, they've got so much talent up there. And Belichick always wants to take away your best thing. Well, their best thing is their front four, or their mm-hmm. front, however they place it, front three, I guess you could say, if you have three down linemen and a base. Frequently, Belichick wants, you know, he's going to take away your best thing. So how do you take that thing away? You entice them to go through this gap when you're going through that gap. Mm-hmm. I think what we could be talking about is how the Rams, as talented as they were over-aggressive in general. It's a problem that Marcus Peters has had all year. Mm-hmm. Talib will occasionally bite on stuff. You know, I think, and I don't want to underestimate the Rams defense or Wade Phillips or anything like that. I just look at over the decades how Belichick has focused on one thing and said, okay, we're either going to take this away or we're going to let this happen and focus on everything else. And he's going to look at the Rams' tendency to be over-aggressive to a fault, and I think that's what he's going to exploit. And that goes everywhere from Donald all the way back to Peters, all the way back mm-hmm. to their safeties. I think that's mm-hmm. going to be the – I mean, honestly, I'll throw this out there right now. I think this is a game where Brady could throw for 200 yards and the Patriots could still win by 14 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think the Rams' over-aggressiveness will be, if they lose, I think that will be the story, is how Belichick countered it.
Mm-hmm. Makes total sense. So are you – I don't want to make you make a pick. I don't think – I didn't make Dominique make a pick earlier in the show. Do you have a – it seems like you're leaning towards the Patriots as being the more likely team to win this game. Is that a fair thing to say?
I think they, you know, in the way they've set up their run game, the way they're going time of possession, certainly the way they play defense against the Chiefs, I think they've arrayed a lot of things to be prepared for everything McVay and Phillips do. And as great as McVay and Phillips are, I don't know if they're ready for everything they're going to see. I think you know, as much of a, as most of America would not prefer this, I just think, you know, the Patriots may be, the Rams may be a better team talent-wise, mm-hmm. defensively in certain areas. I just, and given what the Patriots have been doing on defense lately, the Goff issues I talked about before. He has not been nearly as efficient in the second half of the season under pressure or with the deep ball. So the explosive plays may not be there. I think in the end, you know, Jared Goff running out of oxygen, that's another story for you on Monday morning. I just think the Patriots are set up to win this against this particular opponent.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's just the opportunities in the slot for the Patriots where the Rams are significantly worse. Even with Tlaib in the lineup, they're basically league average at every spot except for the slot where they're a yard and a half worse than league average in terms of yards per attempt. I think the running game you mentioned and the opportunities they have to, take advantage of a Rams defense that ranked 28th in rush defense DVOA during the regular season. And then, like you said, Goff. I mean, there's going to be opportunities for Goff, and we see a guy who can certainly make plays. I mean, that throw against a third of Brandon Cooks in the first half in the Saints game was incredible, perfect throw. But he also can be inconsistent.
The Saints that were like, "Whoa!" Kind of turned my head around with him. But this is a different defense.
Sure, it's very true, and I think there's, I think he may get five opportunities or four opportunities to hit a pass for a big play, and I don't feel confident, that he's going to hit all four of them in the way that I think I would be with other quarterbacks. So, I wouldn't be shocked if the Saints, or if the Rams won. I they're a great team. They do a lot of things really well, but I do think this is a bad matchup for them in terms of what the Patriots do well. So I agree with you. I think the Patriots, I wouldn't be shocked, but I lean towards the Patriots as the favorites for me here.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's when you look, Belichick's history from Super Bowl 25 to last week to all this year, it seems like one of those games where he's been cataloging things all season and he's just ready for it.
Yeah, I can
buy
it.
Which he tends to do like nobody else.
Right. It really is an opportunity for him. And it's going to be a fascinating game. But Doug, if people want to check out more of your stuff, previewing the game, or in general, just stuff you've written over the year and, of course, your book, where can they find all of that?
The book is The Genius of Desperation, which you can find on Amazon and at Triumph Books and wherever fine books are sold. And all my all 22 Nattering and other stuff can be found on the USA Today Touchdown Wire site.
Yeah, highly recommend for the offseason. If you're going to miss football, getting back into the flow of things, becoming a smarter fan, Doug's book is highly recommended for the history of how coaches have created opportunities for themselves and how they've, they've created things that have become part of the game today based on, as the book says, as the title says, desperation and needing to come up with something to advance the game forward. But Doug, always a pleasure. I hope we're both right. But obviously a lot to talk about Monday. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Always my pleasure, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest today, Dominique Foxworth of The Undefeated, Doug Farrar of USA Today. Hope you guys enjoyed this X's and O's, heavy show, really fascinating stuff to me, of course. I don't know all this stuff. And Dominique, of course, an ex-NFL player, Doug, someone who studies X's and O's as well as anybody, outside of the ex-player sphere in the football internet universe. Really two smart people, two people who I'd recommend you follow their writing, and them on Twitter as well. We're going to come back tomorrow, going to talk with people who cover the Patriots regularly. Lindsay Theory of ESPN, Nick Stevens covering the Patriots. Really fascinating stuff from them coming tomorrow. Get to some of the, some of the matchups on a personal level when it comes to this game coming up on Sunday. And then, of course, Monday, recapping. Again, I'm leaning Patriots. You can read a lot, I believe 10,000 words of information as to how I feel about this game, the things to watch for on ESPN.com. Check that out. More audio coming on Monday.